Welcome to Business Uncomplicated, the podcast where we simplify the complex, cut through the noise, and bring practical hands-on advice from others in the trenches. Today, we're talking with Reena Bhatia about an acceptably simple framework that cuts through the chaos of customer success. Reena's career has been shaped by structured thinking. She studied system dynamics in both her undergrad and MBA programs, which she says set her on a path of approaching problems through frameworks. From consulting to successive roles at Salesforce and Asana, her career has run the gamut, with the sole focus of putting the customer at the center of everything we do. In this conversation, she's going to walk us through her four-box framework, where up and to the right is really the strategic difference that makes your customers successful. Looking at plotting activities that your team does against what is actually strategic and necessary from the customer's point of view, not yours. We'll dig into how to run the exercise with your team, why most health scores are fundamentally flawed, and what should get automated versus eliminated entirely, and how AI can become far more powerful when you have this structure in place first. If you're on a transformational journey, implementing AI, or just need to streamline your organization, this podcast is for you. Four boxes, one question. What actually matters to your customer? Let's go.
One, two.
Reena, welcome to Business Uncomplicated. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to have this conversation.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. Before we jump into the conversation, because I think this is a really interesting conversation for a lot of reasons. I think nowadays AI is sucking all the air out of the room. And I think that a lot of people are focused on the technology. And what we really want to talk about today is a framework that actually helps that technology be more successful. And I don't think there's a lot of that conversation going on. And so I'm excited for you to kind of share and impart the framework that you've been using and working on with clients and how that actually is the true accelerator, I think, to success.
I'm just saying that, you know, I think with anything is if you can ask structured questions, if you can create things, and I'm a frameworks person, I like to set things up in frameworks. So when you ask them structurally, you kind of get more interesting outcomes.
Before we jump in, Reena, I just want to introduce you and give a little bit about your background for the folks listening.
I am Reena Bhatia. I have been in customer success for quite a few years. To give you a quick overview of my background, I did consulting when I was younger, I went to business school for my MBA. And then I focused a lot on system dynamics on both my undergrad and my grad. So that shaped a lot of what sets me along this path of wanting to think things through structurally. I went to Salesforce for 12 years post-MBA school, and I was in sales for the first 8 years, running a value team for 4 years. And then I ran an innovation team called Ignite, which really we were going with customers to kind of look at what's the art of the possible. And then I moved into internal strategy, ran a strategy for industries, and then moved into running strategy for customer success. And that's where I met you, Rich, also. So that was great. And we had a good time working together. And then I moved on to Asana, where I ran customer success for Americas. And now I'm consulting and working with different clients on how to accelerate and how do I take all this, not just customer success work, but also being very data-driven, value-driven, innovation. So all the design thinking work that I learned during that innovation time, how do we take that and package that up to be what the customers want? Because ultimately, right, it's customer success is about where that's what gets me excited about customer success, as it really is. Customers should be in their success zone 80% of their time when they are working with me. It should only be selling to them a little bit. And then it's how do I use it and why do I get value?
Yeah. And we had John DeRocher and Shane Hughes, who you obviously know very well. From our previous lives. And we were talking about customer success. And the funny thing is this conversation came up with another client I was talking with. And, you know, when the sales ends, and you were in sales, so you know this, is that's like 10% of the customer journey. The real journey begins when that deal is signed and we go into that success motion and ultimately the renewals motion and all that good stuff. So it is interesting when people declare victory on the time the contract signed, you're like, guys, we've got such a journey
We're just getting started.
So having this post-sales, you know, framework is really important, not only for the success of the client, as you point out, but the success of the employees that are trying to execute on behalf of those clients. So I loved when we started talking about this, the whole notion of up and to the right. As soon as you said that about the framework, I was like, you already see the visual, right? You know the Madrick four quadrants and you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Up and to the right. That's where I want to be. So talk to us a little bit about the framework itself and the quadrants and why those quadrants are important and how the framework actually gets applied.
Yeah. I had a leader ask me, how do you get your organization? How do we get customers up and to the right? And I'm like, what does that mean? And it's a great visual in your head. Like, what is up? But like, up and to the right, we need to move up and to the right. And, you know, everybody will think, you know, you're like, that's what we all need to go to. But what does that mean? How do I get to a 2x2 that gets me up and to the right? I'm like, what do you mean by that? I don't know. You guys figure it out. And so what we came up with that really helped us solidify what should we be doing? That's where I was trying to get to is like, okay, when you say what takes us up to the right, one, you have to think about who, for who is it up and to the right? So when you said that about sales and we celebrate the company celebrates the sale because that's the moment of revenue. And that takes your internal company actually up and to the right because the revenue is now booked. And guess what? Wall Street cares about the revenue. Our stock price is determined by their revenue. Everything is sort of that revenue feed. Customers, what is their up and to the right? It's value, right? Like what is, I'm getting value off of this thing. Something is happening where, so the framework has to one, take the empathy of the customer and not the internal team in order to really provide what customer success needs to accomplish, which is value to the customer. So then you think about what's up and to the right to the customer. And for me, you know, I think every situation changes the 2x2. But in this scenario, I'm talking about what's the customer's right, what the team, you know, we brainstormed with the team and we're like, what would we put on our 2x2 things? Here, what we did was what was strategic and not strategic that we do, and then what is necessary and unnecessary. So that was like our two quadrants. So you can think up and to the right is strategic things that are necessary from the customer's viewpoint. And then, I mean, you can think about a lot of things that we do that might not be necessary from a customer's viewpoint, but we kind of think, oh, it has to happen. So how do you change it and flip the script to from our customer, who's the one that's interacting to you? So a good example would be is a welcome call. You know, every customer, you know, when you get a new customer and they get signed, you do a welcome call with the customer. Where would you put it from a strategic to unstrategic and necessary to unnecessary? It might be necessary because they need to know who the CSM is, but it might actually be unnecessary because you could write an email.
Right, right. Totally different view of looking at the activities. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then we can talk to customers and go, hey, what do you think about that welcome call? Necessary? Like, do you feel like you have to have a hello? I just finished talking to sales and now I'm talking to you, a welcome? Or do you want something out of that call more than just a welcome and an intro? And so those are the things where you start saying, okay, now what are all the jobs to be done that we do? And what I did with my team is we physically wrote them down on post-it notes at an offsite. I think this is like one of the offsites I've gotten the most stuff out of. Is every job to be done, everything that we do. We surveyed everyone. We looked at all the calls. So think about Zoom calls and all this stuff. We looked at all the calls that we took as an organization. We looked at the data. We looked at logs, like people are logging their activities. And we wrote down majority of the jobs to be done. And we wrote them out on paper and post-it notes. And we had people do round robins on what against these 2x2s.
Right.
When you broke down and simplified it, I'm wondering what was the reaction from leadership in particular, because it probably turned some things up on its head.
Yeah. There was a couple of things that we noticed. Is one is that just by doing jobs to be done, you realize how much you actually do and how much you don't do and how much you say you do, but you don't actually do. Like there's, so in that particular, we were doing this one type of call over and over and over again. And I was like, okay, well, that's really interesting. It was like a teaching call, like a lot of training that we were doing. Like, but we have a training department that sits in marketing, but we're doing the training calls. And so that was like, I think the aha moments, like we just wrote down the aha moments. We kind of like accepted that they were there. We accepted what quadrant we put them in. But actually the next thing that we wanted to do beyond then putting everything that we were doing in the quadrants is then putting them into where we want to be. So it was like where we are and where we want to be.
Right.
And then what we presented back to leadership was where we want to be. I mean, I didn't open up the kimono to everything that was wrong because everybody knew something was wrong, right? So I was like, it was not my job to sit there and tell everybody like, look, we're doing all this stuff wrong. What my job was to do is to say, where are we going and how are we going to get there? And be very like step by step about that and say, these are the things we're going to let go, which this exercise allowed me to figure out, well, what are we going to let go? And by the way, everybody in the team doing it together made everybody also excited about letting go of things, right? Like if you walked in, you said, well, we're not going to do this anymore. And they're like, a welcome call. We have to do a welcome call.
Right.
Everybody gets to the conclusion together.
Right. Right. A little more powerful.
Well, and that's an interesting point because we talked about that as well, the silos that Crick created within organizations, right? And I think this speaks a lot to those necessary and unnecessary tasks, right? So, hey, some organization determines, hey, this is the most valuable way we engage with customers. And another one says, well, this is what we do. And then when you really overlay them and look at them holistically, you're like, no one's getting value out of those, though. And it's just really your perspective. And when you have that larger viewpoint of the customer in the middle, obviously, you do get that different thought process around, well, really, how this is taking five more days than it needs to, or this is not really producing a result. So when you looked at those tasks that were unnecessary and necessary, did anything play into it? So was it, hey, a necessary task has to have a specific outcome versus an unnecessary task, you know, doesn't add any value? Like, were there rules of engagement around how you determined necessary versus unnecessary?
No, we let people make that decision, but their framework has to be the customer. It would be even more interesting is to bring a customer in the room when you're doing this exercise.
Yes, it would.
Right? If you have a trusted customer, which almost every company does.
Yeah.
They're likely to say, hey, I didn't even know you did this stuff in the background, or
that's when the real impact starts to come in, right?
Yeah, but I mean, you can like walk in and ask, even if you ask a customer, what things do we do that are super necessary? Like you think that like we really need to do these things. And then I think that's important is to frame what viewpoint you're coming in from with an exercise like this. So everybody has that viewpoint, then you can have that conversation. Now, Rich, there were a lot of conversations back and forth on, I think this is necessary and I don't think it's necessary to do. And with the AI conversation, we can get to this later, as the AI conversation makes them a lot more interesting, right?
Right, right.
But we did determine a few things that like, well, maybe we're doubling up on this stuff, that we're doing it and training is doing it. So how do we make training stronger? And that was something that we started doing, was through the work of this exercise, it kind of brought up this idea that maybe we need a welcome call that we send all customers to that kind of gives them an overview of training that's happening. And then also the other thing is bringing in people cross-functionally. So we brought in like SE leaders and sales leaders also when we went through this. Like one or two people that were coming in from other departments, our training department, our marketing. We invited a smattering of cross-functional teams so that they're like, oh, we do that as well. Or we don't do that. I don't know why you do that. Or
right.
You know, oh, you do that. That's fantastic, you know?
Right, right.
There's always goodness too.
Nice. What's the most surprising thing do you think that comes out of that exercise? Is it we're doing too much? Is it, what are the surprises you typically see? Is there a pattern?
The more surprising is, it's not surprising because it's almost the same pattern, but it ends up being like the up and to the right stuff is hard to get to. and you're almost never doing it because it's so hard. So if you think about it from a customer's viewpoint, what's strategic? So what's not strategic and necessary might be, hey, I need somebody to make sure that all my open tickets are paid attention to. Well, that's not very strategic.
Right.
But it's necessary to ensure that they're like, you know, CS tickets are like any open tickets they have with support are taken care of. But the stuff that are strategic and necessary is like a business case. How many times has the North Star for customer success been value? And how many times do we actually get to the value case with a customer? And so those are the things that create a lot. Like, you know, if you can let go of other things, if you can figure out, it also takes skill set sometimes and a skill set shift do that up into the right stuff. That was the other thing that we realized is our organization didn't necessarily have the full skill set to do the four or five things we were thinking up into the right. So architecture was another one, right? Really talking to our customers about integrations and architecture and how do they really truly do that work? Well, we realized we don't have as many technical folks in our customer success organization to be able to do that work. But then that puts you along a path to start correcting the things that you need to correct to get to strategic and necessary from a customer's viewpoint.
Yeah.
And then
you
also have to let go of some stuff. You know, the stuff that surprises a lot of people that maybe the leadership doesn't necessarily get surprised at, but sometimes, you know, like first line managers do, is how much unnecessary and not strategic work that's being done.
Yeah. So you talk a lot about the customer. Obviously, the company plays a big role. And so there are company goals. So maybe, obviously, we know that Salesforce has always been considered kind of the founder of customer success in the SaaS world, right? And of course, they moved to a monetization model pretty early on within the success organization to Premier and the success tiers. But each organization is kind of on their own journey as well. Some are monetizing, some are cost cutting, some are, you know, looking at renewals because renewals aren't going well and they need to get renewals because, you know, that needs to start 6 months or 9 months before. So how do you balance the company goal? Because, you know, you talked about obviously upskilling people. There's a cost there. There's also a shift to the customer needs. Right? So we're trying to add value to a customer. We're trying to monetize the service. We're trying to upskill our team. Right? So there's this great intersection of all these needs and wants, both on the company side and the customer side. So how did you balance that in that framework?
Yeah. And the few other things that you didn't mention that I've heard is, you know, people have growth goals. So they want the product to be grown through their customer success organization,
right?
Product feedback and product acceptance, all the, you know, training that they need to do for product, you know, and then again, the support tickets and following. There's just so much, right? I think customer success, that's the hardest part about customer success is that it is, because it's like 80, 90% of the time that a customer should be in it, it can be anything if it's not defined. So defining what it is that's important to you as a company to accomplish for this organization, like what are the success criteria for the company for success? And it's usually we just want our customers to be happy, or, you know, we want to stop. You know, it could be as simple as the complaints that go up to the CEO. And if there's a lot of them, then customer success is not necessarily doing, but it doesn't look at it holistically, right? And so I think part of customer success's job is to work with the company, the internal company, and to define the goal and to really start with what's up and to the right. What does up and to the right mean to you as a company, right?
Right.
And it can't be all of it. You can't have one organization be responsible for, like, solely responsible for the retention, the product adoption, all of the above, right?
Right.
So it can't be one. It will never be one because the customer's in that space for a long time. But it can be important to have that conversation and lead from the front of that conversation of what are the most important metrics. Onboarding is another one, like first 90 days. That, you know, I just worked with a company that was super focused on the first 90 days. And so if you get the first 90 days right, then you're, you know, hopefully their customers are on a journey. And monetizing it is another one. Can they sell customer success? Can they sell professional services as well? They all take different skill sets too.
Yeah. So it's interesting because I think we've all seen over the course of our careers the importance of different organizations within a company. Do you feel, based on all the things you just said, that CEOs actually value of CS as the way you just described that relationship to the rest of the company?
I think every CEO is different. So I cannot group them together.
He's a consultant. Yeah, I'm in.
No,
but it's true.
Every CEO is different.
Yeah.
Have worked with CEOs that have valued customer success. They just don't know what to do with the organization, right? It doesn't mean that they don't value customers. Almost every CEO I have worked with, almost, I will caveat, almost cares about their customers deeply. They like really care about their customers.
Absolutely. Right?
Many of them see the necessity of customer success, but they, just like I just said, they can be anything to everyone. If it's not defined on what it is a customer success organization is doing, it is very hard to say that this organization is accomplishing this thing. Because honestly, even a success organization, let's think about retention as the base goal. Even as a success organization, you know that your sales organization sets up the retention early on. What's in the contract? How have they sold it to the customer? How is the product? And then the product organization really matters. Does the product work really well? Is it giving the customers what they need? So do we sell them what they need, and is it doing what they need? And in the end, a customer success organization can help with retention, but they can't be the sole, like the job of retention, it's very hard to say it can solely be on the shoulders of customer success. So you can look at activities that you can do, like you said, engaging at least 6 months before the renewal. We know that that makes a difference with the customers. We know that probably onboarding the customer really, really well will make a difference with the customer. So you can make things, you can do activities that can help drive it. You're also responsible to then say, go back to those two other organizations and say, hey, these two things are not working. Maybe the way that you're selling is not setting customers up for success. Or maybe the things in the contract are, you know, hindering us at the renewal time zone. Product, you know. So if you're the owner of renewal, then that CEO needs to set it up in a system of saying, you're the owner, customer success can be the owner of the renewal, but they have to listen to the feedback coming back from those customers to make the whole cycle, the whole system work well to pull that retention number.
Which I think leads into the discussion around analytics and how analytics are used across companies, especially in customer success. I mean, we went on this journey, you know, of the health score, right? Health score became really important, pulling in all the different factors of the company, right? So what does the health score really mean, right? Like, is the customer healthy or not, right? And is that an indicator of they'll renew, that their CSAT is good, that they're a happy customer that's going to refer you, and all those good things happy customers do, right? I guess the question really is, first, do we really just drown ourselves in KPIs and customer success and really are still not getting to the root of what drives what? And so if we think of the four box, are there guiding KPIs or principles that you absolutely, like, here's the baseline, guys, and if you don't even go beyond the baseline, you're good.
But yeah, I use a bit of a different framework for health scores, honestly. Mm. Let me do the four. I'll go back to the four box with data, and then we can talk about health scores. From a data perspective, go back to the four box, and the four box is meant to be from the customer's viewpoint and not from our internal. So when you say we're drowning in data, a lot of times it's we're drowning in data from our viewpoint because we're trying to analyze it from the internal out versus the customer viewpoint. So what's strategic and what's necessary? That's your up and to the right. So what data would a customer say is strategic and necessary, and what's not strategic but necessary? And those should be where your data points land from a customer viewpoint, because that's who's going to renew in the end. It's a perception game, honestly. I don't know, like, I've been involved in so many renewals, and sometimes you're like, well, this customer's not even using this platform. Like, they're not going to renew. And all of a sudden the check comes in, you're like, whoa, they just renewed. And then you get the other viewpoint of it. And it's like, this customer is like using this. They're like basing their whole business on this. And all of a sudden you have a renewal that's not like coming in and you're like, what is going on? And it's because we haven't looked at it from the customer's viewpoint. Part of what's going on is the buyer change. The buyer is in IT and not in the person who's using it. And so one of your metrics needs to be, have you talked to the buyer? And that's not a metric that sits in your back end systems,
but it is actually
I scorecard it with our teams. And I say, okay, well, is there integrations? Because we know integrations make you stickier. If this system is easy to rip out because it's not connected to anything else,
then it's not
strategic. It's just something that's hanging out there. Even though you think they're running the whole business off of it, they can just rip it out and put something else in and run their whole business off of it. So is it really, truly strategic? And if it is, if that's an important marker, then it should be a data point that you use to understand the customer and understand. So that's where I would take the framework and say, what data do we need is from the customer's viewpoint, from the perspective of the customer. And if renewal is the most important thing, and now think about like, is it renewal? What's your goal? Renewal? Is it growth? Is it selling post-sale? Then put on what's your data points that are necessary and strategic.
That makes a lot of sense.
And then, love that.
Yeah. And then from
I love that because then that starts to get really predictive too. If you've got the data, then you can start to see, okay, where's the pattern? What's going to happen next?
Yeah. And then you build your health score. So you build your health score off of what you think is predictive of the customer in the goal that you want. So I think there's a health score for the goal that you need or for the stage, life cycle stage that the customer's in. There's not just one health score. And this is the misnomer of health score. I've done it three times now, right? Or like helping design health scores. And I really don't think there's one health score. Everybody's looking for one. And then they put 60 data points into one thing. And then all of a sudden you're like, this customer's unhealthy. Okay, but unhealthy based on what? What's the measure of health?
Because we've diluted the health score in such a way that it's not yielding.
Well, in the early days of Salesforce.
Very interesting perspective.
Yeah, in the early days of Salesforce. So I was a customer when I was at Dell. And every quarter, the CSM would come with the report and we were flaming red in adoption. They're like, well, people aren't using it. I said, hold up. We have 30,000 licenses. I said, we have like 10,000 sales users. I said, so if we're hitting that number, we're healthy. The other people are marketing or support people. They're people who aren't in the system every day and have no purpose for being in the system. So although your system is telling you I'm unhealthy, what I'm telling you is if you're hitting this mark, we're healthy. But back then, they didn't have any sense of, well, this is a unicorn in our grand scheme of things. So when we talk about customer segmentation and how enterprise uses it versus middle market versus small business, to your point, that is another factor that changes health.
Yeah. Start doing cohort analysis, right? You size of company, industry, start looking at your health score from a cohort. Now you're talking, Rich, what you're talking about is the customer viewpoint and you're talking about it personalized to you. Because you've told them now what you care about. What is your up and to the right? Like you could do this exercise with your customer, honestly. You just say, what's strategic and necessary that you think I should be doing? Like that's your welcome call right there. Because you start that relationship that way and all of a sudden you start personalizing it. And once you start personalizing it, I'm sorry, do not send them a health score that's generic, right?
Right.
You know, you don't go backwards and give them all the generic things. You start getting to a point of like, what's Rich's health look like? Like what is healthy to Rich? And then how can you take that? And that's your business case now. So you're starting to form this value conversation that's personalized, that's with your customer, because you've come up with a strategic framework that works for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've identified their value prop. Like if it's value, great. Every day, all day, every day.
Yeah. And then you're starting to get to like, having a value conversation, more value, more personalized. You're taking the data and personalizing it. You're saying, Rich cares about this cohort of people within his company. I would say, yeah, you could start looking at enterprise and say, most of my enterprise customers use about 20% of their licenses.
Right.
And say, okay, if they're at 20% and they're at this cohort and if they're high tech, they're more savvy on certain things. And so maybe they're now high tech is hovering around 15. Now, how do I get high tech from 15 to 20? would be a great conversation because now you're starting to move that. So that's like a, and then I, you know, one of the things I start thinking about is how do you get from the like individual company to the portfolio, then to the cohort, then, you know, and up the chain, but then keeping the structure of your framework, not just going again, getting lost in all this information. If you keep it, like if you keep yourself on like a path to continue structured work, structured thinking.
Yeah. The idea around the segmentation and the framework. So do you think, or in your experience, have you found that the delta between the segments are large, or is it like a 2 millimeter shift that you'd make between, you know, digital to middle market to enterprise?
From like which companies?
From the customer's perspective, whether it's KPIs or whether it's the necessary or unnecessary strategic versus tactical work.
So it is actually, I think industries are more like similar and size of company is more similar. I don't find very much more difference beyond that on whether they're happy with the type of interactions or not, or the jobs that we do. Like, I find that that's where the data starts like really kind of shifting more. Like industries, for example, the way a hospital system might use your product, right, could be very different because there you have hospital workers, you have people coming in and you have part-time, you have full-time. It's very different from a tech company where most workers are full-time and most workers are cohorted into marketing and sales and post-sales, right? And so you have shift workers. They come in at night. They come in the morning about how they're using it, when they're using it. They might share a login for something, you know, just a different pattern of work and the type of people working, right?
So we talked a lot about data. And of course, that's the fuel we talk about for AI. So if we move into this AI conversation, you know, you've talked about a bunch of different data points that you're plotting customers, these necessary, unnecessary, strategic versus tactical, you know, what are the customer metrics? What are the company metrics? As AI has become more prominent in the work you've been doing, have you seen that accelerate the value of the framework, make the framework become more necessary than ever before? Because this technology is allowing maybe a more rapid analysis of multiple data points, or like, I guess, give me your thought, how AI stands for you now and how you think maybe this helps leapfrog the use of AI in a more productive manner.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's a couple of things that where I see AI come in and using a framework makes it stronger, I think, of an outcome. The one thing I've noticed within the workflow today is that CSMs will use AI like just to help automate parts of their jobs, right? But it's not consistent and it's not using a strategy, I feel like. It is very like, okay, how can I use it to write an email?
Hodgepodge for task
and get something faster or analyze this company. And I mean, I quite honestly, sometimes that's how I use it, right? Like, give me the Porter's Five Forces of blah, 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 you know.
Right.
Whatever company I'm going to
go. But is it helping us meet those big goals?
Yeah. But does it help you understand? So one thing you could do is use AI for jobs to be done, right? You could start your jobs to be done list. What are all the jobs? Like, you could pump in all this information that, remember, I had everybody do. I had everyone look at the Zoom calls. I looked at this and that. Like, I looked at all the things that would give me information about what stuff we do. You could probably create that list a lot quicker than 2 weeks that we took to go interview all the CSMs to find all that information out. And that would be a great use of AI in the first place. What is everything that we do? And categorize it and put it into... Now, if you asked it to put it into necessary, unnecessary, and strategic and non-strategic, I think you lose a little bit of your thinking of an organization to think about what's strategic and what's necessary, right? But you could ask for empathy points from a customer. You know, you can go and find out all of the NPS responses that you've gotten or any of the feedback you've gotten from customers. You can have them scrape your website for feedback they've seen from the customers. You can look at patterns of like, when do they engage and when do they not engage? That is where I would use AI to get the customer viewpoint of something and start understanding if you have even transcripts, right? Zoom transcripts that when you've had customer success Zoom transmit. Give me anytime a customer gives you feedback on the type of work that you're doing. That's all great data points to say, okay, what is the customer thinking about what we're doing? And so those are the areas I would think about using AI to start with, like, how do you get a framework done like this? And then once you know what's necessary, unnecessary, you might want to use the things that you think are up and to the right and start analyzing, what is my plan to get to this organization? What are the things I need to think about upskilling for?
Right, right.
So, yeah.
Well, and I love the things that are less important, still necessary. Dude, ship those out to AI as fast as possible.
Yeah, that's the other piece. Yeah, Andy, thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, that's the other piece, is like, how do you take the work that you don't necessarily... Let's go back to that welcome call.
It's not the high impact. If it's not high impact, then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you get every single deal that plates forwarded as much as to automatically run a welcome email? And then that welcome email introduces the AE, right, or the CSM right away. And then it gives all the Calendly links for the CSM when they're available to have the first call. All that, like, you just now had some stuff happen where the CSM has not even gotten involved. They all of a sudden know that this customer's in their portfolio and they're prepping for it, but they're not necessarily doing all that work effort. So I think there's like automation in the workflow. That's like the first part of it I think about. And then the next part I think about is like, how do we take the CSM and elevate them to be beyond? And that's their value cases and things like that, that they can work with AI. But first, you have to get the automation off the plate to give them space.
Right.
Right. How, so we talk about human in the loop, human out of the loop. You know, that's the new jargon. We traditionally in the CSM model, digital or the lower tiered customers have always struggled. You know, companies have struggled to support them. Those customers have struggled to get the engagement that often they sometimes think they need. Of course, it's a dollars and cents thing. How many customers per CSM? You know, we all know the math. As we move into AI, do you believe that companies will make the decision that digital is totally supported by an AI bot, AI interface? And do you think that's going to be a mistake long term for renewals and kind of growth of those customers because it's a cheaper way to service those customers? And I don't want to say they don't value the customers, because that's not true. It's just a, you know, numbers
game. It's just a higher volume.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, if you think about it from the customer's viewpoint, I'm going to flip it again. Always there, right? And if you get everything answered ahead of time, then what do you get off of talking to somebody, right? And what you might get off of talking to somebody is some information to make your business go better, some information that maybe a competitor also, like people in your cohort, not competitor, but like in your industry are also doing. So something to make you and your job and your company better. And if I didn't have to deal with all the other, like, honestly, somebody telling me this is your score, this is your health score, Rich. And you're like, no, it's not, because I know my business better than you do.
Right.
If you can just get your health score automatically, and you can, how can you then take that human interaction to the next level to give you a lot of value? So I don't think, that was a long answer to no, I don't think that people will come to the conclusion that there shouldn't be any customer success. I think the customer success definition will just be moving to the point of, where can you give value to that customer, and how can I reduce the hops to ask for that value, right? If I need an architect to come help me, give me your best, you know. And I actually just dealt with a customer success organization for something I was doing. And I kept asking them, hey, who else is doing this better than us? Like, can you give me your expert on, you know, partners? Because I was trying to pull together a partner portal. And the thing that I really wanted is somebody who's seen it at four different other places that can have a conversation with me credibly, that can say, hey, they put it in here, here, and here, and these are the three or four things they're thinking about. These are some metrics that I would think about that I've talked to so-and-so about. That's super valuable. Then I'm like, we're hooked in, we're having a great time.
If
the presentations of success scores is really right. tough unless we're having a great conversation around what am I seeing and what should I be doing differently.
So if let me challenge you with this. If you were leading a success organization again and you had your framework dialed in and you had your up into the right exactly how you wanted it, then would you say you would leverage your CSMs across your customer base, regardless of segmentation, to engage in those discussions?
Yeah, I would try. And this is what we were trying to do. Like, it takes time to move an organization that way.
Totally.
Right? But when you recognize it, you start having internal calls with your CSMs to have cohort conversations. Hey, what are you seeing? Where are you going? I engaged my first line managers to start when they have team calls, pull out the best stories. Customer stories really matter. So we like focused in on the customer stories. We looked at the customer stories, other customer stories showing value. Are we finding something interesting? We would highlight one per week and we would say, hey, this thing is really interesting, so that's all the CSMs can see the great customer story that we worked across. And we did a lot of cross-functional stories too. So we emphasize, like, if they worked with the SE and the professional services and so-and-so, let's put a story together that was cross-functional. So yes, I think the training, I mean, I don't have a training budget, so I couldn't take them and send them to, I asked the CEO for training money, didn't get any training money. But instead, what we did, we started just moving people along the conversation to be more value driven and to be able to give that back to customers. It's not easy, though.
Yeah.
Change is not that easy.
It's not easy. And all the other stuff, like, you have to have empathy for the CSM. All the other stuff has to happen. If they don't write that welcome email and there's no automated system to write that welcome email, they still have to read it. They still have to put it out there. They still have to send it to their customers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It's true.
Sorry, I'm harping on this welcome email.
It's the one tangible thing that everybody can understand.
Yeah.
Welcome,
but we always find that we always find those things. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's talk about operationalizing the framework. So I would assume that when you talk about building this framework and you said, oh, we sat in the room and it was, you know, whiteboards and sticky notes and maybe in the world of AI, you get it done a week sooner or whatever. But to your point, there's still a lot of conversation, right? And important conversation, strategic conversations that need to take place. How often do you revisit the framework? I mean, so you get the framework done once. You say, guys, we believe these are unnecessary tasks and we're either going to automate them or, as we've talked about before, don't do them at all, guys. Like, you don't, it's not even a matter of maybe automating something. It's a matter of not doing it at all because it's literally that unnecessary. And then you said to the up and to the right are those, like, you got to move the ship away from the iceberg, right? That's going to take time. So how often is this become, hey, I set my yearly goals based on the framework and then I'm going to revisit that the next year. And so I'm going to go through this exercise again. Or is there a lightweight version that keeps on informing the repetitions, right? We always say do the reps, right? We stole it from Mel Robbins, right? Mel Robbins always like, you got to do the reps, you got to do the reps. So what are the reps you do after that initial?
And it's a framework? Great initial assessment. So many of us have been to like great offsites and you come off the ground. You're like, now what, right? So I was like, this is a perfect question, especially this time of year. What we did from there is we took all the things. Now, remember, we went to all the, what do we do? And then where do we want to go? And then we took all of that and we said, okay, now how should we interact? Because we had multiple teams. Because we didn't actually say jobs to be done, who has to do them. We just said, these are the jobs that have to get done. And then we took those sticky notes and we eventually said, okay, which teams need to do these different work that needs to happen. So it wasn't all on the CSM, right? Like the training stuff would sit with the training team. So one, I took a picture of everything. I put it in a deck and it was like my one deck to explain to others who were not in the room what had happened.
Hmm.
Where would the mindset shift happen? And that was also a reminder to the team of, hey, we've shifted our mindset. We all agreed we're now moving this way. But you're right. It it needs to then turn from a strategic to a tactical plan to implement. And for us, the tactical plan to implement was at the end of setting it on where do we want to go, we picked a few things that we wanted to fix before we picked all eight. Like, say there was eight. I'm just making up the number now. If there was eight things we knew we needed to go do, we picked three to start with for the year for planning. And we put the other five on sort of parking lot. But we kept a deck. And I'm a big believer in one deck and not 15 million decks. So I keep one like planning deck for the year. This is what our plan is. And I present that same thing to all my business partners. And I actually, one thing I learned from Salesforce is that you get certified on the deck and you
right.
present that over and over again and everybody's speaking the same language. And so my directs are also then not certified, but that's the first place we present it. And then they present it back and they present it to their teams. This is what we did at the offsite. These are the things that we learned. This is the direction we're going. And so when you do that over and over again, yes, you adjust it a little bit. You get feedback from your business partners. What about this thing? What about that thing? I don't think you should let go of this thing. You bring it back to sort of like that central planning body, and you work with your ops team and your strategy team to really implement this, implement it into your technology, into your planning, into SKO for the year. It really should be the plan that keeps moving forward and
right.
be sort of a living thing. And then, yes, you can revisit it the next year's offsite or 6 month in offsite. Or you can say, hey, we accomplished these three or four things. What about the other five? Are they still relevant? Because relevancy right. really matters too. Where you are in the year, what product has been released from your, you know, sometimes it's like, now there's a new AI part of your product and you need right. to change the way you're talking to your customer.
Right, right, right. But it's still the same framework of how do we evaluate it?
Yeah.
And I love it from the customer point of view. I also love it stays the same and it's my... Like, you better pick the right song that you want to sing over and over again, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it should be able to be changed, but the idea that you're not wiping a deck and starting a new deck and wiping right. a deck and starting a new deck, but everybody's rowing in the boat together.
Exactly. It's consistency management.
Well, I always say we get sick of saying the message before people get sick of hearing it. Right.
Yeah.
So to your point is, hey, this is what I'm going to say. I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it. And then eventually you're like, is it getting through to anybody? Do I need to say it differently? But the reality is you don't. Because the second you shift that just a little bit, people are like, wait, I'm confused. I thought we were
right.
going left. And now are we going right now? And you're like, oh, I deviated from the message. And I don't think people realize how important that is.
Yeah. And it's clarity too. It's like every time you present it, you are more. Like confident and
right.
like I often yes. put it into a calendar then and like, what's the calendar? How are you going to get trained? What's the training on these things?
Damn.
What's the process? And as you get an FAQ that comes in, you add an FAQ to the back.
Builds it in.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so you build like a good 8-slide deck and you just pitch the heck out of it. And then from a leadership perspective, your CCO, your CEO, they realize what you are trying to do and how you're trying to change. Now, some people might say, hey, you're not doing enough. You should do all eight or you should do this or that.
Right.
But at least you're getting that feedback rather than, yeah, that was good.
Right. Right.
Well, I always love that. They're like, hey, you should do more. Okay. Can I have more staff? No. Can I have more budget? No. But you should do more. Awesome.
True. 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 So if I'm a CS leader and I want to do this, because I think this has so much relevance to so many, I mean, I'm thinking about how do I use this? It has so much relevance to so many different areas of the business. I'm wondering, what's the first step that you would recommend that CS leaders do in order to get on this trajectory of moving up and to the right?
Well, step one's jobs to be done. What are the things you do today? Ensure you understand what your organization does. And if you have like a... if you have a scaled organization, if you have a digital organization, you know, you do different jobs to be done. And then you also, I mean, we actually went pretty detailed on this and we looked at how many people do that same job. So sometimes your professional services also does a welcome call and you do a welcome call and somebody else does a welcome call. Think about the customer's perspective.
That's a great idea to look at it. Yeah,
right?
Through the different...
So I... always start with that, the understanding of your organization, but like, don't say, I know what my organization does. Actually, like, under, like, get it written down.
Get it down. Yeah.
Then I would, I think, understand what is your 2x2? What's your up and to the right? For me, it was the strategic necessary, you know, and that's a really easy start point. But then there was other points where I've changed that 2x2 as to what are the most important dimensions.
Okay.
And that's where I would start. And then I would either map it out yourself or really get your leaders involved in that so that they get buy-in.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, we talk a lot about digital transformations. We've all been through them and, you know, 70% of them fail because of, you know, they don't get alignment. They don't get the right things. And what I love about this conversation and good framework is it really does structure the conversation. And what you've walked us through is not only like how you're going to start it, but how you operationalize it, which I think is the piece people miss. I think to your point, they go to the offsite. They have a really great time. It's this rah, rah, rah. And in the era of post-COVID where travel doesn't happen as much and budgets are slashed and people are remote, I think we've missed that connection point to actually physically being in person, doing that whiteboarding exercise and having those conversations. Because I do think a lot of those strategic conversations happen organically and over a Zoom call, they just don't seem to happen. But to your point, it's like when we walk out of that room, you are going now to be in, you know, Atlanta and I'm going to be in New York and somebody else is going to be over here. Having that operational plan and how you laid that out just brings to light why these transformations fail. They don't really do that step well, I think.
Yeah, I think as a leader, it's my responsibility if I'm bringing everybody together to not just like go out to drinks. You know, it's really important to like know each other and like each other. And I love building teams that like each other, you know, like I'm a social person too, Rich, you've been out with me before, but I think to do the work when you have the time together. So that was one of the things that when I went through design thinking training, I really learned it, like how to build a workshop, how to put time and effort into like making sure the workshop is like, because that time together is so precious.
Right.
Like you said, it doesn't happen as much anymore, that stretching that budget to the level that you need to stretch it to. And then people not feeling like, you know, I think about it, in 2 months, will they feel like they didn't know what happened there and they don't see any output of what they saw?
That's
right?
The one thing.
So
yep.
As a leader, exactly. It's my responsibility to like show them, tell them and show them again. Like, yeah. You know, you or you tell them
and
what they're doing.
Same job. We have the same metric and the same cadence. Like, here's what we're doing.
Yeah. And remember when we talked about this, remember when you and having some healthy dialogue, healthy tension and building that healthy tension and then coming back to remember, we said it was about the customer.
Right.
Right. Love it.
Okay. So we usually do some rapid fire questions to end up. So what do you think the biggest hype around AI is?
Use it for everything and it'll solve all your problems.
What do you think the reality is going to be?
I think when you're structured, you can get a lot more things done. And I think we'll be, if you use it right, you can get to like be a superstar. I think you can use it to be a superstar and we'll see more superstars. And then that bar will be raised as to what a superstar is.
What resources out there do you find most valuable right now in your research, whether it's a podcast, a book, or what have you found recently that has just kind of either ignited passion in you or has given you like this is like a really good resource that people should know?
I don't think I have the cornerstone on that one. I listen to a lot of podcasts in a lot of different, both in like personal realm, in business realm. So I listen to Acquired. I listen to Diary of the CEO right now.
I
listen to, you know, some fun long form interviews with people. And again, going back to that empathy piece, if you flip it on its head, you have to understand people.
Right.
And you have to understand where they're coming from and where the world is at right now. And so, you know, listening to tech podcasts, you listen to, you understand how different people talk. You'll get an understanding of, you know, a person coming from a tech executive versus someone who's coming from like retail executive.
Right.
Sorry, that was not rapid.
The question's rapid. This has been a rapid hour because it's been really good. And there's so many places, I think, where this fits in. So thank you so much for all of your time.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. This was really, really interesting. And I hope people listen and take it in the spirit of, you know, there's a more efficient way to drive change. And I think we've seen it so many times where people just make it harder than it has to be.
Yeah. I think change for change's sake is not fun or interesting.
Right.
I think structured change, when you look back and all of a sudden you're like, you didn't realize you changed, but you moved and you you grew,
and you
is just a lot more fun. A lot less painful.
Totally.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. And we will talk soon.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely.
Thank you soon.
One, two.